The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight!
What?
TV party tonight!
Oh, we got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuit!
Everybody loves Hypnotoad!
Gary Dawg!
Larson and Blurzball!
Futurama!
Hello, good evening, and welcome to TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, Alexis Haina, standing here with Mr. Mark Rattledge. And Mark, I have one question for you. Did somebody order an orange?
Those are fucking onions. Also, don't bother me. Don't bother me with your pitter-patter. I'm trying to watch the Heat Boston game. That joke's going to age like wine in about like 6 weeks.
No kidding.
Like, what was he watching?
See, I thought you were going to make fun of the size of this orange. This thing is like the size of a freaking softball.
Yeah, that is a large orange. Those are goddamn grapefruit.
That's my head for comparison. It's a jumbo navel. It's a jumbo navel. So it's not like, you
that's
know.
That's what she said.
And we're off.
There we go.
All right. So unless you are a fan of the series and you watch the third season, you really did not get that last joke, because that was a line from an episode of Resident Alien. We are talking about the third season tonight. The popular, fun Alan Tudyk. We need more of you, and we need more of you where you were given funny shit to say, unlike Wish.
I'll tell you, I joked about this last night or Monday night when we talked about Abigail, that they've pretty much just let Alan Tudyk throw himself around, on camera. Like, they weirdly, because the show didn't start off this way, but weirdly they're letting him do a lot of like physical comedy now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's doing like Chevy Chase kind of like falling downstairs kind of things, which is fun.
Credit, he's able to do it. He's in good shape. So
he is. It is fun to watch Alan Tudyk throw himself around.
Well, so this is our third time coming back. We've been talking about this show since day one. It is one of our favorites. It's always just been you and me, Mark. We don't bring anyone else in on this.
It's true. Only Murders in the Building, there's a handful here.
Upload.
Yeah, it's just a Mark, just a old good old fashioned Mark and Alexis mess around.
Pretty much. Now, I almost wanted to invite Al Sedano to join us, because he mentioned on Facebook that he was watching it, and I commented on his wall. I'm like, oh, we're going to review season 3 next week. And he said, one day I'll get there. And I'm like, oh, crud, I'm still too far behind.
Don't stress poor Al out. He can only watch so much television at a time.
Yeah, I know. He has too many comic books to read instead.
That's right.
Hey, not complaining. I love that man's comic book collection. It's impressive. Seriously, Al.
He does have a rather large and impressive comic book collection.
Seriously, Al, if you're watching, we love you, man. All right, so yes, Resident Alien Season 3, brought to us by Jocko Productions, Amblin Television, Dark Horse Entertainment, Universal Contact Productions, inspired by the Dark Horse comic book by Peter Hogan and Steve Parkhouse, which we did a pseudo comic strip on way back when. It admitted, you know what, the show is way better than the book. Sorry. All right, so the general premise, if this is your first time joining us and you haven't been watching the show, is that Alan Tudyk plays an alien who crash lands in a very teeny tiny little town in Colorado. He promptly kills the town doctor and assumes his form, watches a million episodes of Law and Order to learn how to interact like a human, basically doing the best Lenny Briscoe impression since Lenny Briscoe. And by the time we have wrapped into the third season, his secret is out to many people in the town, including his best friend and confidant, Asta, who works as a nurse at the clinic.
Yes, at this point, as many people know about his secret identity as everyone knows Batman's secret identity.
I was going to go with Daredevil.
Either way.
All right. So, yes. Yeah. By the third season, a good chunk of the town knows his identity. Like, so we have Asta. We have her best friend, Darcy. We have Asta's father, who runs the local restaurant. And we have a, well, I think he started off as 12, but I seriously doubt that kid is 12 anymore. The son of the mayor, Max.
He ain't no 12. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, Max, who knew who he was from day one, because he has a genetic disorder that allows him to see through the, I guess it's like a hologram disguise kind of a thing. So, which is kind of fun, because then whenever Max is talking to him or any other alien, they just put all the makeup on, so you actually see what Max sees.
Which becomes a, when you get to the stinger at the end of the season, the season finale. It becomes, a focal point of what Max sees is a focal point of what the big cliffhanger is.
And we will be talking about that when we get there. So anyway, the third season starts up with Harry Vanderspiegel, as the doctor was called. So that's the name that the alien has taken for himself, mostly because the trying to say his name in his own language is not possible.
Yes, it's the same joke. It's the same joke as in a lot of like science fiction alien type stuff, where the alien language is nigh unpronounceable and it's just a series of loud sounds.
You Wasn't know? That also a joke in Splash when she tried to say her name and she ended up like saying such a high register that she shattered glass?
What is your actual? What is your name, Madison? What is your merman name? Like shatters glass. Oh my god. You know what's funny about that? And not to be the typical Alexis hosted show where we can't stay on topic and we are wildly tangential, but I can't tell you how it tickles me that you reference Splash, because it's been in the back of my mind weirdly lately. Like, I don't know why, I don't know what prompted it in the back of my head. Maybe somebody was talking to me about mermaids. But I was like, you know what movie I want to show my kids and what I want to rewatch again and maybe force someone to talk about with me, possibly at gunpoint, is Splash. And there you are, bringing it up again. Splash was a great movie when I was a kid.
It was. Really great film for both Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah, Eugene Levy, and John Candy.
That's right. An all-star cast for back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But yes, that was the joke back then, and it's still a running gag in science fiction and fantasy.
Well, as the third season picks up, Harry is now working for a general for a covert government organization, because we have found there is a bigger problem than Harry being on the planet, and that is the Greys. If you ever think about, if anyone ever said, just picture an alien in your head and you picture the big head, the big eyes, the tiny little bodies, then that's what the Greys look like. It is the stereotypical alien design, and the Greys apparently are, well, they're kind of colonizers. They basically go to a planet and say, yep, ours now, bink, and they kill off everyone else.
It's the same motivation as Independence Day and every other alien movie you've ever seen, where basically, you know, we done run out of resources. It's funny, we've run out of resources, we now have to go to another planet and take over that planet and take their resources. And anxiety is in the culture, in the sense that things that thinkers are worried about, things that intellectuals are mulling over and trying to, you know, and are concerned with, show up in our popular fiction. And I feel like for the last 20 years, if not longer, there has been a concern amongst the intelligentsia that we're going to run out of shit. I mean, I know like in the 70s and maybe earlier than that, it was whatever we were calling climate change at the time, that we were going to do enough damage, or there was going to be enough weather phenomena that we were going to wreck the planet. And now it just seems like everyone's afraid we're going to run out of stuff. And I don't know.
Go get Thanos.
Go get Thanos. Yes, go get a genie and make wishes. But I do find that interesting, that when we're thinking about what would motivate aliens to come here, or what kind of motivation should we give our bad guy aliens, it always seems to come down to they need stuff, because inside they're worried that human civilization is going to run out of stuff. And I don't know, maybe someday in the future someone will hear me say
breaking up a little bit, Mark.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it. Froze on my side too.
Okay.
Think we're gonna run out of stuff anytime soon. I think, you know, I get the anxiety about it, but it just seems unlikely to me.
Pretty much. My only complaint about the Greys is that in season two, we have interaction with it, it's like a singular Grey, and the Greys communicate telepathically. And I still remember watching the episode when we're introduced to the first Grey, and I'm sort of going, wait, is that George Takei doing the voice? And then the alien goes, oh my. And I literally said, I'll ask a stupid question. And no George Takei in this season.
No.
It's like, you have Alan Tudyk, which is awesome. You need more George Takei.
I don't think that, yeah, I don't think they have the Greys even talk this season, do they?
A couple. Okay. In a couple of the flashback episodes, most of the communication and information is actually delivered through what we find out are Grey hybrids. The Greys apparently cannot exist in our atmosphere and with our gravitational pull. So they have been kidnapping. This is actually interesting. They abduct pregnant women. They remove the baby. They hybridize the baby with Grey DNA. They return the human woman, but because they've frozen time, it's like nothing has passed. And the woman just thinks she's had a weird miscarriage or something. Or in that one truly haunting scene in the last season where it was on a bus and there was a flash of light. And then the woman just looked down and it's like she is no longer very visibly pregnant. And that was weird as hell. And
how admittedly, traumatizing, how traumatizing that would be.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I know you've never been blessed with child, but for women who have, like, you know, if the show is using that as a metaphor for actual, like, loss of child, ever talk to a woman who's lost a baby, you know, in utero or whatever, it's absolutely traumatic, horrifying. I mean, we went through it here. My, you know, Melissa lost the first baby before Lily was born, and she was a wreck about it until she got pregnant again. Like it's a truly harrowing experience for almost any woman, you know, to go through. Absolutely. So it's an interesting thing because the show is not particularly deep or heavy, but it can at times touch upon some things that are, I think, resonant, with the human experience. And in this case, very negatively. So it's one of the few things that does give whatever depth the show has its depth.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, in the second season, we have another recurring character is we have our Mayor Ben and his wife, Kate, who's a school teacher, and they get pregnant. But then, yeah, she loses the baby. Well, she doesn't lose the baby. She just takes a test and finds out she's no longer, or she gets her period, find out she's no longer pregnant. And because she was so early on, just assumes it was a false positive on the pregnancy test. But as she
spends the rest of the season going absolutely crazy about it because she keeps having almost like flashbacks to this pregnancy, and she, you know, and like, again, we as the viewer understand what's happening with her and have to kind of sympathize with her in order to follow along. But imagine being that character, and you're like, you're having flashbacks to an incident that you don't remember ever actually happening, and you're like, why am I imagining this baby? And then when it happens, she's so like wrought with emotion, and she's like, I don't understand what's happening to me. And then to be Ben, you know, like, you know, in theory, husbands love their wives. I mean, I've never experienced it, but it does happen. And he's just like, I just want to be helpful to you. I want to be there for you. I want to be a part of this. And no fucking clue what's going on with this woman. And so from his vantage point, like, she's just going crazy.
That actually brings me to one of the points about the season is that as much as I love watching Harry and everything going on with him and Asta and all the others who know that he's real, the story arc with Ben and Kate in this season was fascinating. And frankly, I think could have been a standalone series or a standalone movie. This idea that you have not even just a couple, but we both Ben and Kate have been abducted. How Ben's apparently been regularly abducted since he was a kid.
Right.
And you know, they've got the little chips in them, look like little tiny bumps in them and everything. Right. But again, the Greys wipe their memory before they send them back down. But they keep having these weird flashes because the memories are still there. They're just really buried in their deep subconscious.
Right.
And you have other omens and other things that are happening, like the owls, which Kate thinks is first an omen of death based on the Ute tradition. This being in a small town in Colorado, they are next to a Ute reservation, and there is a very large Native American population in their town.
Was it two Utes?
What? I'm not trying to insult Native American culture, okay? I don't want to get us
There were two Utes. These two Utes stole a car and shot up to Piggly Wiggly, or whatever they call it. The Sack of Suds, that's what it was. They shot up the Sack of Suds, Alexis. Don't you understand? You've seen my cousin Vinny. You can't fool me.
But later on, she finds out that apparently seeing owls is a reoccurring motif for those who have been abducted. They say that a lot of people who have been abducted regularly see owls. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was kind of interesting because they say that that's just a false memory that the Grays implanted. But the more I thought about it, I thought about the shape of a Gray's head and how it would look looking over you. I'm like, that's how an owl would look, with the big eyes and the little nose. Like,
it's not
that would look like an owl.
Yeah, it's not expressly stated in the show, but it is an interesting idea that you can kind of infer that the aliens would go out of their way to implant a memory of something that looks like them. And so, like, okay, so the closest Earth animal to get you to, you know, off the beaten path to not assume it's aliens is you'll have a memory of an owl. Close enough. And I think that does play on manipulation of the brain, you know, and memories and thoughts and stuff like that. So it's kind of smartly written. The show, like I said, the show ranges from smartly written to dopey, but it's the smartly written stuff is always in like the minute details, like that one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have this journey, especially with Kate, who pretty much feels like she's losing her mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are creatures of rationality and understanding. We do not automatically go aliens. Well, some of us do.
Not the people I work with, but sure, most humans.
People you work with, I'm a Comic-Con vendor. What do you think they would say?
Any number of things.
Exactly. But she's trying to make sense of these fears of with the owls, because she's seen the owls and she's terrified and she wants to sell the house because she just no longer feels comfortable. Because we find out she's getting regularly abducted because the aliens have her daughter, and they want her to bond with the child as it gets older, but then they wipe the memory afterwards. And then you have that one truly terrifying thing morning where she wakes up and she's apparently in her, before they wiped her memory, she wrote, "It's real," on her arm. And she just wakes up and sees that. And that's almost something out of a horror film.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was waiting for an opportunity to bring this up, where she handcuffs herself to the bed. And she wakes up and she realizes that she's been abducted again, and there's nothing she can, you know, again, you know, that it's a metaphor for like helplessness, you know, descent into badness, all of that. It's Resident Alien is not a horror show, but it definitely has some interesting horror elements, and that's one of them. I mean, if you've ever talked to somebody, and again, this is another metaphor, that's going through onset dementia, like before they completely fucking lose it, they know something's up. They know they're not quite what they once were. And like my dad is getting older, and he knows some of his faculties are starting to go. And to talk to him about it, it's almost like he's in mourning. You know, it's just like my sharpness, my intelligence, my memory, it's all starting to wear down. And he's really sad about it. And it's like, I there's nothing I can do to stop this. This is part of the aging process.
I have family members the same way.
It's like a car wreck in slow motion. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're going to hit the car. You know, you're about to have an accident, but there's nothing you can do about it. You just kind of have to like brace for impact and know that whatever happens after, you'll never be quite the same. That's what it's like. That's what it's like to slowly lose your mental faculties. And it's horrifying.
Like, so I have a family member. She started having memory problems. She's gotten better. Mm-hmm. She's gotten a lot better. But for a while, she just was terrified that she was having mm-hmm. such a hard time remembering things, because she was really scared that mm-hmm. it was on, something was coming on, and we were not allowed to talk about how it's like, oh my God, you didn't remember that. We were not allowed to bring it up because it would just send her into horrible waves of depression.
What's so occasionally, especially when I'm having struggles with depression or, you know, just general situational sadness, you know, I don't know if people know this about me or not based on the podcasting, but I've had a rough few years. So anyway, so one
people
of the things
like me don't help.
At least of my problems, sweetie. Don't give you that. Don't give yourself that much credit. Okay, I got real problems besides you. But
at least I didn't blame Robert.
Fair. Don't you talk bad about my sweetie.
I thought I was your sweetie.
I have a lot of sweeties. I'm Polly sweetie.
Okay, I'm stealing that line. I am stealing that. That's good.
You can have it. Anyway, when I was got completely off track there for a second.
Rough few years.
Oh, yeah. I've had okay. So one of the things that I will do to sort of perk up my my mood is I'll rewatch old shows, which as an aside, I do this sometimes at work, and like the people I work with don't quite understand that I find myself very entertaining. So like I'll listen to our podcast sometimes just to see how they sounded, sometimes because mm-hmm. I remember the show being fun and I want to entertain myself.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just, like I said, I need a good memory. You know, I need to be reminded of something fun that happened to me or something good that happened. So I'll rewatch our old shows, and people at work are just like, what kind of fucking ego do you have that you rewatch your own stuff? And I'm just like, whatever. I'm the most entertaining person ever. So why not watch my own
stuff?
I
actually do the same thing. In fact, when, mm-hmm. you know, I travel for a living.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of times where I'm on the road for like 8 or 9 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. Now I have unlimited data on my phone, so I can listen to YouTube videos or movies and stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And I like to, now I'm not saying I watch movies while I'm driving, but I like to either listen to things that, to movies that, or TV shows that I know by heart.
Sure.
You know, once a year, I think my favorite one was I had Lilo and Stitch on in the background while I was driving. And then I found out that Disney Plus doesn't pause their video when someone calls. So I had a girlfriend call, and I'm trying to figure out why I'm hearing phasers in the background. I'm suddenly realizing, oh, Stitch is still escaping the ship. Can you hold, please? Beep, beep. Okay, now I can talk.
So I can't remember what prompted me to do this. I think it was somewhat I was interested in what we talked about. Somewhat I was gearing up for our Oscar show this year, so I kind of wanted mm-hmm. to go back and listen to some stuff that we talked about. And the beginning, the very first time, because I had talked about this on the show, when you kind of challenged us to start doing more Oscar stuff, and I brought that up, because Robert and I are who we are, we were like, fuck you, Alexis, we'll not only do Oscar shows, we'll do an entire triple feature of that year's Oscar stuff. So we did Nomadland, The Father, and Mank, and Robert and I talked at length about what happens in The Father vis-a-vis the diminished mental faculties, and we talked about the fact that The Father comes across almost like a horror movie, because poor Sir Anthony Hopkins in that movie doesn't know he's lost his marbles,
mm-hmm.
and so he is just like an emotional roller coaster and at the very end he's like regressed to a small child, you know, calling for his mommy. You know, you really do come into this world the same way you go out, or vice versa. And so they take it all the way back to Kate in Resident Alien. You know, when you don't know which end is up anymore, when the world stops making sense to you in that vivid a way, it truly is horrifying. I mean, when you think about the nature of horror besides, you know, gore and jump scares, it's the lack of ability to control your environment around you, and things are happening you have no control over. And, you know, when you... we as human beings long for that control, long for that stability. You know, it's the way humans progress and stay sane. And when you lose it, everything topples over.
When you think about it, the scariest element of Nightmare on Elm Street is not Freddy Krueger in and of itself. It's that you have no choice but to face Freddy Krueger when you go to sleep.
Yeah, I was talking about that with Jonas. I said, you know, again, I've never been the world's biggest fan of horror, but I've certainly watched a lot of it in my time. And I said, the thing about Nightmare on Elm Street, and I kind of said it the same way you just did. I said, the thing about Nightmare on Elm Street was not that you were being chased by this burn victim with knives. it was you had no control over your environment. You know, you just wake up and suddenly you're, you know, being puppeteered by your veins, and there's nothing you can fucking do about it.
Oh,
you
don't God, under- I hate that close-up so in this third movie. Oh,
The feet.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Of all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, that's probably the grossest image I can think of. Like, I don't even care about, like, the bloodbath in the first one or anything like that. It's the puppeteered veins. Blah. But that's,
although
that's,
admittedly,
that's scary about Nightmare on Elm Street.
Admittedly, the third one does have my favorite moment, though, when the girl dies with her head through the TV and the nurse says it's a suicide. And I still remember the first time I watched my friends and I paused and were like, TV was up here. That girl was no more than 5 feet tall at most. How was that a suicide?
Moving on.
Wow, we really did get sidetracked there. Yes. Okay, so yes, Harry is working with the government, with a government program run by Sarah Connor, of course, Linda Hamilton. Always fun to have her.
Yes. To try hang to figure on. Out. Hang on to the people out there. Former female lead hero woman, Linda Hamilton.
You needed to hashtag all of those for it to actually have any effect.
Yes, ma'am. Just needed to say that for the people going, there has never been a female superhero since, you know, before the Marvels or whatever dumb shit was said.
Sigourney Weaver wants to go have a chat with you in the corner and kick your ass.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they're trying to figure out what the Greys' mission is, because it's clear the Greys want to destroy the Earth. We have Joseph, who is a Grey hybrid. He's basically, if Harry had a
piece of ass.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a running joke that all of the hybrid aliens are, like, insanely hot. They are just gorgeous.
That had to have been, a thought on the producer side. It's just like, we're going to commit to this. Like, why don't we make the model hot and just really, really ride that as much as we can?
Hey, the guy who played Joseph is absolutely gorgeous, okay? No
argument.
I will
not kick him out of the bed for eating crackers, and I'm mostly straight. Mostly.
We all have someone who would push us over the line on the Kinsey scale.
Sure.
But yeah, so he is now an antagonist because he and Harry are butting heads, trying to figure things out. You know, he wants to know why Harry hasn't left Earth, even though he was supposed to in the previous season. Harry wants to know what the Greys are up to. You get a really great confrontation between the two where essentially Joseph kind of inadvertently reveals he doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. The Greys don't even trust their hybrid. They're plants. They're right. Hybrid is aliens. They don't trust them enough to tell them the plan. And it's clear that that actually really bugs Joseph, because he's just like, no, they haven't told me. And he's so upset about it.
Well, sure. Like, you want to sit at the cool table. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be left as an outsider. You know, it's like, what am I just pretty? I'm, you know, too dumb to be a part of this. Yeah, that's exactly it.
There's that line in the final episode. It's like you were the only one who wasn't invited to the party. And I'm pretty sure you and I both know exactly what that feels like.
Sure do, Ollie.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was always invited to the party. I was always cool. Oh, that look is working priceless. Worth it.
All right, so we have that. We have Max, who's trying to up his ability as the alien tracker now, because his go-to best friend Sahar has moved away. Okay, the whole thing with Sahar was weird. She leaves at the start of the first season because she's apparently been accepted into this prestigious
The start of this season, right?
Yeah, she moves away at the start of this season. She's been accepted into this prestigious gifted students program. Right. She comes back in the second to last episode saying she dropped out, and she talked, and for the record, I kind of like her idea behind it. She's like, I was always the smartest one here, but when I went there, I was just average. I don't like being average because everyone else there was smart.
I'm but, going to assume they wrote that in because the actor wasn't available.
I guess. Cause I could not figure out any other reason. It's like that's why again, yeah. It's just like, I couldn't figure out why they cut her.
It seemed very shoehorned in.
Yeah, especially as they try to have Max start an alien club with these two other kids from school, and they bring nothing to the table at all.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I was paying the world's most attention to the show all season long. I binged it. I was in, I was out, I was on my phone, I was jerking off, whatever it was I was doing, and that's a detail that went right past me. I I almost have no clue what you're talking about because I could care that. There are things I keyed into this season that were very much like, okay, I, you know, yes, this is important. And then stuff like that, right over my head.
Yeah. Not to mention, Max kind of just becomes sort of one of the more annoying characters for a good chunk of this season. Again, he doesn't have Sahar to back him up. He's clearly trying to prove to himself that he's the new alien tracker, especially since the previous alien tracker got sent back to the island. But then you have weird moments like where he shows up at Harry's door saying, I haven't made a science project. I need you to help me. And it's like, screw you, kid. And he steals Harry's this model that he's been making of Yellowstone to show the general what he thinks is the Gray's plan. And he has no idea what the hell is what it is. He's basically just like bullshitting his way through the whole presentation.
Right.
And I don't know. It just seemed like a very weird choice for this character.
Yeah, I'll tell you, they gave Max a lot of play in the first season and then less play in the second season. And by the third season, they have so much more interesting stuff going on with his parents and so much more interesting stuff going on with Darcy that I feel like a lot, even Asta, like a lot of the shift from a lot of the shift in character focus from the first season seems to be on like the secondary and tertiary characters, almost because I think like the writers are like, there's nothing more we can do with these people. Like, we have to have them in the show. They're the stars. Like, Asta, Alan Tudyk, you know, Max, they were the leads in the first season. But the tertiary characters and secondary characters have become much more interesting.
Okay, like, so we have the whole thing going on with Max and Kate. Ben and Kate, sorry.
Yeah.
We have the sheriff and his relationship with the detective and the other. Is she a detective? I can't remember.
She's deputy.
Deputy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have Deputy Liv and her whole thing with her grandmother, who I think
she's my favorite character in the entire show. That actress has the world's best delivery. Like, she is so fucking deadpan. Like, again, the show is wildly fictional. You know, we are dealing with, first of all, whether or not aliens, I mean, I can't believe statistically aliens don't exist in some form or fashion, but for the sake of this conversation, that is,
I'll go say, unless you want to make a TikTok thing about whether or not aliens exist, let's please move on.
Yeah, no. My point is, the show is wildly fictional. Okay, it is pure fantasy. Everything that was happening in this show, does not resemble reality in any way. But the realest guy in the room is Liv. Like, the way she reacts to things, her fucking delivery, her reactions to stuff happening around her, and then even her going off on the grandmother when she finally fucking snaps. I was like, this is the most identifiable, like, the character I most identify with in this entire show. And like, there's a lot of stuff, like, and it's so funny because she's paired with one of the most annoying characters in the show, Sheriff Mike. At this point, the shtick is old. Like, he's not the douchebag he started out as, and we talked about that last review that we did for season two.
Because, yeah, we saw some great growth out of him in the second season.
Right. And now, that's the problem, though. Like, they almost needed to write the character out of the show, because once they cured him of his douchebaggery, there was nothing left for him. So now so it's like, it's one of those where, like, you know, they resolve the issue at the end of the movie, but there's a sequel, so they have to now unresolve it and have this hero go on the exact same journey again. That's kind of like what's happening with Sheriff Mike. Because, like, he's still an idiot douchebag. Perfect example. When they get the van, and they've got the key, and they don't know what to do with the key in the van. And so he goes with this whole thing about how the flooring is, like, fake in the van, and that's what the issue is. And so I need a whole bunch of tools to rip it out. And he turns around, and Liv goes, oh, I found it. And she sticks the button in the hole. And it's like, okay, yet another example of how Mike's a moron. Got it.
Yeah, what was the line? I have followed your instincts so I could lead us to victory or something like that?
Yes. And it's like, okay, they still have... Woo, I won my bet. yay!
Good
can
for
eat
you.
Tomorrow. I can eat tomorrow and possibly pay a bill. I have problems. Anyway, it's almost like they don't know what else to do with him. And it's like, he's like, somebody figured out that him being a douchebag is kind of funny, but they can't make him too much of a douchebag because then he'll regress to what he was in the first season, which nobody wants either. So it's just, if it wasn't for Deputy Liv, those scenes with him would be nigh on intolerable to watch. Like, insufferable, I think is more accurate word. And the only thing I liked about him this season was something that I actually personally related to. He has the whole thing at the beginning. And I did this when I started dating again. I kind of went through this too. And it's, that's why it rings out to me. Because when I first started dating, it was very much like, well, the man always pays. And some of it's, you know, to impress the lady that you're with and show her that you're a decent, you know, dude. But it's also like, that's just the way I was brought up. You know, the dude pays. Yada, yada, yada. And I ran across a lot of women that was just like, it's not 1950. Like, it's okay for us to, well, some girls are like this. It's okay for us to pay. It's okay for us to go halves. It's okay for us to trade on and off. Like, don't be like, you know, intrinsically knee-jerk misogynist about it. And that's what's going on with Mike is like, he's coming from that old school mentality of, you know, this is what makes a man. So a man pays. That's one of the things a man does. And he's dating this, I think it's the FBI agent. And she's just like, you mind letting me be an adult woman? Thanks. And he can't fucking do it. And so they end up breaking up because he can't handle it. And then later on in the season, he reflects back on that. And he's like, and he's doing one of his usual rants when he does it. But he says something very, very resonant. He was like, maybe you were brought up with, you know, strict ideas of masculinity that are now in conflict with the way the modern world works. And I kind of heard myself thinking the same thing. Not that my dad was particularly misogynist, but I was definitely, you know, brought up a certain way to the point where I've had women say to me, they were just like, I haven't seen a guy act like you in years, if at all. Like, I walked a girl to her car once and she was like, ooh, big points for walking me to my car. And I'm thinking to myself, what animals do you date that they don't walk you to your car at the end of the date? And they were just like, yeah, welcome to dating in the year of our Lord 2022 at the time. So, or 2023. So I was like, all right. Wow, it's easy to impress the ladies now. You have to not act like a complete asshole. And that was kind of like my takeaway from that. And they ended up getting back together at the end of the season, which was nice. And it was a nice moment for Mike. But I liked that. That was the only little bit of growth that he had in the episode. The rest of it's just his continuing sort of, you know, oafish shtick that he does.
Also, I was kind of disappointed with his reaction to the aliens in the season.
Oh,
season
he 2 ends. That was great.
Well, not just that. Mm-hmm. That was great. It's that he's so in denial about it. Season 2 ended with this idea that him and the others realizing there was something else going on and it mm-hmm. leading towards discovering about the aliens. Mm-hmm. But I thought by the end of this season, we were going to have just a major, you know, blow up of everyone finding out that Harry was an alien, that Joseph was a gray hybrid, that, you know, things were going on. And with the exception of Ben and Kate, no one else finds out anything. And it just kind of feels like they built all that up at the end of the second season and we really didn't get it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because they don't know if they're coming back or not. So they're kind of every idea is half pregnant or they're purposely writing it this way so they can continue to extend it. Or it's just, you know, not the world's greatest writing team. Like, I don't really know what the issue here is, but I'm with you in the sense that it never feels like any idea is fully realized. Like, it's almost, the show is almost wrote timidly. Like, we don't want to fully commit to any one thing because, you know, we might have to keep this going for a while and we don't want to blow our load all at once. But then it kind of, and I think, like, I'm always happy to talk about the show with you and I'm happy to certainly watch the show. The show is mildly entertaining, but it definitely, you know, the kind of stuff that we watch, you know, that I watch rather, it tends to be a little bit more weighty than this. And this is the reason why. Like, I'm okay with you or anyone else watching things that are just fanciful and slight. I don't always enjoy it. And I found myself kind of struggling with this season. Not that I wasn't entertained, but I do struggle with stuff that's this slight, that this is, a show like this has such difficulties fully committing to any of their rather big ideas. Like, this, the show has so much potential. And then they go, well, if we do that, what if it's like the difference between this and a show like Deep Space Nine, Like, I don't know if you've ever watched Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but that had some weighty, heady ideas, and they fucking embraced it like nothing I've ever seen before. That's why when David and I talk Star Trek, we talk so lovingly about Deep Space Nine, because that was a show that was like, we're going to, this is cock and balls. We are fully committing to these ideas, and we are going full bore with this. And the network was behind them for that, you know, for that era's television, science fiction television. And it's left a lasting impression on me today. And I compare it to something like this. It's not quite the same. This is, you know, Deep Space Nine was not a comedy, but here again, it just feels like we'll touch on this stuff and we'll play, we'll have some fun with it, but we're mostly relying on Alan Tudyk to, like, you know, slam his dick into the camera, because that's all we got now. That's all we got left. We can't do much more than this, people. So that's kind of my impression of the writing on this season.
Even though Alan Tudyk slamming his dick into the camera is always going to be worth it.
I mean, you got to give the people what they want.
Come on, you know how much I love Alan Tudyk. The man is brilliant. He is hilarious. I hate to say that my favorite line in the whole thing is when he's off camera with his son, Bridget, mm-hmm. attacking the Greys. And what was the line? It's like, I am going to stick my head up your... my hand up your ass, a puppet you like you belong on public broadcasting. Let's learn the alphabet.
I think I had a moment when I was watching the show where he kills Bridget, and I kind of jumped for a moment. I was like, oh my God, they just killed the baby, like, on screen. And then of course the baby reforms. And then of course, because it's a sci-fi show and we've only got so much of a budget, it starts forming members of the cast. And we have an extended sequence of him killing this thing multiple times. You know,
to the point that it takes the form of the octopus from the first season.
Yeah.
And he's literally swinging it around like it's a slingshot.
Yeah, I definitely had a Kong, Little Kong moment from Godzilla Times Kong.
I do love Sahar's reaction when she sees all the because it's like the little fragments of Bridget are touching DNA that's been left over. And she looks and goes, do you ever vacuum?
that was one of the funnier lines.
Yeah.
But I had a moment of thinking about the show. Like, have we gotten to the point where we are now just relying on stupid action sequences to carry us through? Like, come on, man. The show was better than this in the first season.
I'm not 100% certain. And while this does leave on one hell of a cliffhanger, I'm not sure where else they can really go with this. And we talked about how we thought the third season would be the final. And I'm just going to say it. I kind of hope the fourth season is the final. I think we've hit our limit. We have Harry now in prison. Okay, this is what I want to talk about. This, I thought I watched a glitched episode. Because, okay, first of all, if you didn't know that Harry was replaced with the Mantid when he said that he had left Bridget behind without us actually seeing it, then you need to go stand in the corner because you're an idiot. Sorry, too obvious.
Right.
You have them escaping. By the way, the reveal that the base is actually the moon. Cool.
Yeah.
You have the scene of them escaping and another ship firing after them. And Harry said, it's like, you know, it's like, we'll get into the atmosphere to avoid detection, but either they kill us or we kill them. Right. And then it cuts to commercial because I'm watching this on Peacock. And then it cuts to the diner and they're okay. And I was seriously just sitting there going, did I miss a scene?
Well, no, that Harry in the diner is the replacement. It's the Mantid.
I know, but I still thought it's like, could we see them escaping the ship? Could we see them landing? Could we see them making it out okay? It just felt like a very weird transition.
No, I don't disagree, but they filled in the blanks enough for me where it was like they have Max seeing, you know, the Mantid with, you know, Harry's body. And then they cut to Harry in the spaceship in the prison cell going, this is bullshit. Like, all right, good enough.
I do like that they keep going back to Harry saying that line.
Yeah.
Because that was what he said at the end of the first season when he found Max on the ship.
Right. And that's the thing. It was like, they keep having to go back to the same well of, well, we have to have a reason to keep going. Even though... like, I don't know, Darcy making a suicide run, I feel like that's a great way to end that character. Can we, like, don't do anything else with this. Like, Darcy starting off as this sort of, you know, almost like irresponsible, bimbo-ish character. And then, you know, the second season of, you know, Austin revealing to her that Harry was an alien. And then this season, trying to keep Harry on track, you know, with the love affair with the bird alien character and all of that. And then Darcy sort of coming to this place of, I have, you know, you took skiing from me. I have got nothing left, but I'm going to do something with my life by blowing up this alien ship with me on it. I'll go down a hero. Like, what a great arc for that character. Kill her and be done with this. End of season. End of series.
And the whole thing with the bomb is such a burnout. Anyway, again, nothing happens. Right. The aliens capture her. They capture the bomb. They're still there. The moon is still there.
That's the thing, is like,
Joseph is still on there. Not Joseph. The tracker's son is still on their ship. So the Greys' plan is still going to fruition. Well, okay, the Greys are still going to try, but thankfully the Yellowstone plan has been stopped. So there's that.
That's like they resolve the issues of the season well enough, but I think my frustration again is there was stuff here that really would have made for a great series finale, and instead, going back to my first statement of every good idea is abandoned in favor of a half pregnant idea. Instead, they just invent a new reason for us to come back to save Harry from the Greys, and then Darcy doesn't ever get her hero movement. I don't think anything changed with Asta. Asta has like the subplot with the daughter and all of that, where, you know, she's trying to be a mom after the fact, and they talk about that for a bit. There's great stuff with certain characters, but overall, I feel like the show is wearing out its welcome real fast. And I guess it's one of those where it's just like, well, as long as they're going to keep greenlighting seasons, we'll keep doing this, which is why we can't commit to anything. And that's my problem is like, if you don't, it's one thing when you know you have like a 3-season commitment. Like the network has said, you have 3 seasons, get, you know, tell your story and be done. Then you can write to that end. When you never know what you're writing to, this is what you get. You get stuff that's half-baked and flimsy because you never know if you're done. Because, like, let's assume they don't come back. Like, I always give this example of the Glades. The Glades ended with the sheriff being shot by an unknown shooter, and then they canceled the series. So they never got to resolve that storyline. We still, to this day, don't know who shot the sheriff. But they didn't shoot the deputy. Yep, there you go. And I think like the lesson learned in television, you know, by professional TV writers is if you don't know, you got to leave it open. So, you know, could they end it with him on the ship being captured by the Greys? Sure, it'd be unsatisfying, but they can. This could be the end. Who knows? You know, Darcy gets to bring the baby back. That's her big hero moment. Instead of blowing up the ship with her on it.
That scene was horribly shot of her going up to the door, hesitating, and then she knocks, and then it cuts. It's like, well, we don't get to see her actually handing the kid.
Because I think all they wanted you to see was her hesitating, like, oh, maybe I should keep the baby. No, maybe I shouldn't. And the fact that she decides not to is all you needed to know. Would it have been nice to fucking see Kate reunite with the baby? Sure, but it's not Kate's story. It's Darcy's.
I don't know. I just feel like that last episode was really poorly directed. Sorry.
Those are my thoughts. I'm not necessarily in disagreement with you.
I did really enjoy the whole thing with Heather and Harry together. His girlfriend.
Oh yeah, the bird. Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun arc. It was kind of broke my heart when the hybrid made her betray him and all of that. But and then they don't do anything with it. It was like, it happened, she betrayed him, she went back to her home planet, we're done now. It was like almost like an extended plot device.
Yeah, although it did laugh, the scene where they're at Darcy and Asta's house for dinner, and they start making weird bird noises, to which I said, I think we just watched what's left of Alan Tudyk's audition video when he voiced Hey Hey for Moana.
Okay.
Hey, further proof that man can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
No, I really liked it. I liked the actors. They had fun. I love that scene where they're watching the video about the bird of paradise thrusting its chest out to attract a girl. And Alan Tudyk stands up and he unbuttons his shirt and they're both acting just so animalistic. I'm sorry. That's funny. That's really funny.
Yes, it was very funny physical humor.
So, yeah, we end the season with a cliffhanger. Harry has been replaced with the Mantid. I should add that that brief scene where the Mantid talks to Darcy and Asta on the ship was voiced by Clancy Brown. And God damn it, if you don't bring, I know you didn't bring George Takei back, but if you don't bring Clancy Brown back, I am going to be furious.
Okay.
Because he's awesome.
No doubt.
All right, so we have that. No one else, and the only person who knows is Max, because again, he can see through the disguise, like the hologram. And yeah, they open the door to see Harry, and instead we see a giant praying mantis head, which is admittedly pretty damn scary. So yeah, Harry and Bridget are still stuck on the ship. We don't know how they're going to get out. We don't know how Max is going to be able to communicate to anyone, since I could be wrong, but I don't think anyone else, I don't think Asta, Darcy, or anyone else knows that he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Could be wrong, but I don't think so. I'm curious how they're going to find that out. It's like we have our own little individual pockets who know the truth, and they're not communicating.
Right.
We have Sheriff Mike punching out a gray, which was weird.
That was great. Welcome to Earth.
We have Liv. We have Liv running into, what was the alien tracker's name? Hang on a second. I actually do not remember this dude's name. Da-da. It's Terry something. I know that.
Gilliam?
Terry O'Quinn. Terry O'Quinn as the android.
Right.
Which was weird.
Yeah. That made me very aware that this was a television budget and not an expensive.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, Game of Thrones expensive, you know, more like Homeboys from Outer Space.
Well, yeah, it's from the Sci-Fi Channel.
Sure.
Have you seen Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus?
No, but that's on the list for me and Jason.
Have fun with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else? Otherwise, let's wrap it up here, Toots.
I do believe that's it. Like we said, the third season, while it does have a few more bumps than the previous season, was still fun. We got some great acting, some fun development. But I think we're in agreement that it's time for Resident Alien to wrap things up. So,
yeah, for sure. You know,
I mean, I give them credit if they can find something really impressive in the fourth season to make us want to stay around. But at the way things are going right now, hopefully things are going to be wrapping up soon. You know?
Have you heard anything about whether or not it was actually renewed or if it was only renewed for one season?
I have not found anything yet.
Yeah.
Last news was about the eight episode third season, which we just discussed. I can't find anything about a fourth season. Well, let's face it, everyone's too busy freaking out because they just announced the Fallout renewal. So that's the only thing people care about right now.
Sure. Well, like I said, and this is the last thing I say, and if you want, we can go into plugs.
All right, let's do it.
You know, it's just because, like, you know, we still have that cliffhanger to resolve. I wouldn't even mind it if it's kind of like a Treme, like, you know, limited, maybe 6 episodes or, you know, 4 episodes, just to wrap this up. If they give it the full, like, 8 to 10 episodes, fine. But honestly, at this point, most of the characters have sort of lived out their arcs, and we're hanging on by a thread here. So let's wrap this up. Let's end the series. Let's send him home or whatever they're going to do with him, and, you know, move on to tell new stories with, you know, with new characters. I'm about done. I mean, I'll come back and talk about it with you for a fourth season, but I mean, like, the showrunner really needs to consider, you know, saying no more after season 4.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, yesterday, Alexis and I and Robert talked to Abigail on Damn You Hollywood. And that's it for me.
That was 2 days ago.
Yes, it was 2 days ago. You're right. Sorry. I'm used to recording on Tuesdays. But tomorrow, Ronnie will be hosting, I believe, Pat and Adam for Fallout. This is now be the third attempt at this. And hopefully Ronnie doesn't screw this up again. Next week.
If he does, I call dibs.
I know. Stuff danced on my friend's grave. Monday,
I'll wear tap shoes.
Monday, we're doing Sons of Anarchy season 3. And then myself and Robert, just the two of us, we'll be talking the new Guy Ritchie joint, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Nothing Wednesday. Thursday, I'm back. Because Sean is getting married in the month of June, we moved all of our Pride stuff to May. So a month early, it's Pride Month here on the Rattlers and Broadcasting Network, and we are kicking things off with a triple feature of The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch, assuming I can find it somewhere. Which I'm actually going to take my daughter in June to a rock opera live production at Janus Landing of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Be prepared. She will have Wicked Little Town stuck in her head and it's never going away.
We got that
for her. Which I'm fine with. It's my favorite song.
We got that for her for Christmas. We got her tickets for that because she had, you know, she had been expressing interest in seeing drag shows, and you know, mm-hmm. she's definitely, you know, we are allies here of the LGBTQI plus community, the Rattlers and Broadcasting household. And so she, you know, very much interested in the culture and whatnot. So when I saw that there was a production at Janus Landing, I'm like, that's a really cool thing to do with my now 13-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. So me and Melissa, such as we are going to take her to go see Hedwig and the Angry Inch in June. And we will be looking at the movie a week from Thursday. That's
just remember,
all.
Just remember, folks, that if we use the wrong pronouns or use the wrong terms, it is not because we are hateful and bigoted. It is because we are stupid.
That's true. All right. I'm done talking now.
All right. Well, I will be coming back next week to talk Shogun. I'm going to be sitting up there with Robert Winfrey and David Wright. Thank God, because that man actually has an Eastern Asian Studies degree. So he's probably going to come across
That's not next week.
May 8th. Yes, it is. May 8th.
May 1st, ma'am.
I'm not working any conventions right now, so all the dates are just sort of blurring together.
Okay. I'll take that.
Okay. In 2 weeks, I will be back to discuss Shogun with Robert Winfrey and David Wright. And again, looking forward to it because Mr. David Wright has an East Asian Studies degree, so he's going to come across like the only one of us who actually knows what the hell he's talking about. But it's going to be fun. Other than that, we will also be doing X-Men 97 coming up. I believe it's in May is when that series ends. I need to double check. I know we got it on the schedule, but hell if I can remember it.
Yeah, it's you guys are scheduled to do that on May 21st.
And of course, we also have House of the Dragon coming up later this year. And I will be guesting on a TV party tonight talking about The Boys, since you won't let me say I'm hosting that one.
Because you're not. That's mine. And you wormed your way into my boys club there. So
I slid into your DMs. I know.
Oh, God. Oy.
All right. So moving on to the plugs that actually do pay my bills. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic. Like I said, we're kind of at a dry spell for conventions right now. We're doing a handful of things using up our free time right now, but our online shops are still open. And if you are a fan of Resident Alien, I highly recommend checking out. I was going to say, it's like, please tell me that actually showed up. My internet has been so wonky. Our UFO abduction Scrabble tile dangle earrings. I actually love this because one, you can clearly see it's a person being abducted. The other, it's a cow. Those are one of my favorite things that I made. So our shops are fully stocked here on Etsy. We also have a shop on Handmade at Amazon. Now, if you are interested in our convention schedule, we're going to be heading out in July, actually, for the Greater Austin Comic Con. Looking forward to that. We always have a lot of fun down there. I love Austin. It's like my favorite town in Texas. After that, we're going to be... we're going to be heading to the Colorado Springs Comic Con in August. We do that every year. Can't wait for that, especially since almost the entire original voice cast of Avatar, The Last Airbender, is going to be making an appearance. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Love chatting Avatar with other fans. I mean, who doesn't? That's like one of the greatest animated series of all time. So we got that. We got the Cincinnati Comic Expo coming up, and we just put in our application for Planet Anime, based here in Kansas City. Don't know why they waited so long to get their applications out, but hopefully we'll be hearing back from them soon enough. So as always, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Not Calling It X, and TikTok. One of these days, I'm going to finally get good enough to actually start putting out weekly videos. I'm trying. I swear to God, I'm trying.
I told you, like, just film yourself making jewelry and stitch and like duet with somebody.
It's hard. Okay. It's really hard.
That's what she said. I got people waiting on me. Take me home, baby doll.
All right. So, yes. See you in 2 weeks for Shogun. For Mr. Mark Radulich, for myself, have a good night. Be well. Behave. I'm going to go eat this orange.